We're getting a couple of messages here from the recording company that it's now going forward. Now, I'd like to introduce our incredible presenter and panelists. Before that, though, I do want to mention that Fred Heath of the University of Texas at Austin will not be able to join us today on the panel due to a family emergency. And we certainly send our good thoughts to Fred today. We are quite pleased today to have such an impressive trio of academic administrators, and I will introduce them all three to you, and then we will begin. Robert Walton is Chief Executive Officer of the Claremont University Consortium, an affiliation of nationally ranked colleges and graduate schools in California. Prior to his service at Claremont, he served as Vice President for Finance and Business at the College of Worcester in Worcester, Ohio since 1999. Previous to that, he served as Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer at Innovative Interfaces, Inc., a leading supplier of information technology to university and government markets, for whom he opened and managed numerous international offices. He has also worked as a librarian and director and concurrently served as an adjunct faculty member at the University of Texas at Austin, the Graduate School of Library and Information Science. So we can still claim him a little bit down here. Jillian McCombs is currently the Dean and Director of the Central University Libraries at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. She holds a master's degree from the Leeds School of Librarianship and began her professional career in England as a music librarian in Huddersfield Public Library in her native Yorkshire, England. Her career in the U.S. has taken her from Washington, D.C., where she worked at the Landscape Architecture and Garden Library at Dumbarton Oaks, as well as numerous federal libraries, such as the National Library of Medicine, the Federal Reserve, and the Department of the Interior, to the University of Albany-Sunny. She has won numerous professional honors and has a substantial record of scholarly publications. Tracy Mendoza is Dean of Library Services at Northeast Lakeview College in San Antonio. She served as Social Science Librarian at the University of Houston, as Coordinator of Instruction at the College of Mainland in Texas City, and as Director of Library Services at Lee College at Dalton State College in Georgia before her current position. She received her master's degree from the University of North Texas School of Library and Information Science in 1991. So we have a wonderful panel, and with that, I think, Bob, if you will take the program away.
Thank you very much, and I really appreciate the opportunity to participate, and I want to thank in advance Tracy and Gillian, who I'm sure will correct all my mistakes and misstatements in their follow-up presentations. What I wanted to do this morning is, in a very few minutes, summarize what was in the written article and then let Tracy and Gillian basically lead us into more of a discussion, and then we'll certainly be engaging with those of you who are listening on the call. To hit the highlights of what I tried to write in the article for Texas Library Journal, was number one, I do obviously come from the perspective of having been a librarian most of my career. 20 years was spent in various capacities serving libraries. I consider myself a librarian. I think one of the ways you can evidence this is anybody who's been to over 50 ALA meetings, midwinters or annual conferences, I think is qualified for life to be a librarian. About 15 years ago, I began to be interested in a different career. And so I think a lot of the context of my remarks really comes not from my time in libraries, but my time outside of libraries. And so my second career, as I think we just heard, has been really focused on more traditional higher education administration. So I was one of those dreaded chief financial officers that we all occasionally love but usually hate. And most recently, I've been the chief executive officer of a group of colleges here in California, 5 undergraduate liberal arts colleges and 2 graduate universities. And in recent times, I've been able to actually return to the library land to sort of finish the context of all this. And now I have the pleasure of going to ALA headquarters in Chicago a few times each year, where I work as one of the trustees for the ALA endowment, hopefully able to use some of my skills I've learned in the higher education endowment area. So what really got me interested in working on this article was, one, Pat Smith got me down on the ground and twisted my arm until I promised to do it. And you all know Pat, so you can certainly sympathize with that. But also, I think it is a little bit of a concern I have as I travel in my current circles in terms of the perspectives that some of my colleagues in higher education administration have about libraries and some of the changes that are going on in libraries. And so, of course, I'm a friendly advocate for libraries, but I also think it's important that we become sort of our toughest critics in trying to look at how others may see us. So the first thing I did, and it should be on your web browser now, is I I'm making reference here to a number of ACRL publications, and again, you know, ACRL has a wide range of really excellent guides for all of us in terms of what an academic library should do. I happen to pick a couple of publications that ACRL has published in the last 4 or 5 years, more because they were just very nice summaries, and in particular, a couple of things done by Lee Heisel. Lee Heisel, for those of you who may remember, used to be the director of the Austin Community College Libraries. He's now up in Connecticut. And essentially, I tried to focus on the three things that are what I hear, certainly when I'm traveling in my circles, which now tend to be mostly with presidents and provosts and business officers and board members of higher education. And that is that certainly we are all trying to understand how libraries as physical and virtual spaces become environments for discovery. And so clearly that's one of the things that we're all focused on. Secondly, we clearly have to understand librarians as leaders and innovators and partners with faculty, and I think that that's one of the most challenging things that we're going to look at. And then third, among the many, many things that academic libraries really need to do, is we need to really talk about what is the future of librarianship and our role as sort of stewards of what have been traditional library services. And so the reason that I put the next slide in, this, and I would recommend that all of you as it comes up here, I would recommend that all of you at some point go on to YouTube and listen to a very interesting presentation by Jim Neal, who is currently working out of the president's office of Columbia University. Jim is a really talented guy, and he has done an excellent speech, which you can watch in its entirety on YouTube, which was presented about 2 years ago at Berkeley, where he talks a lot about some of the themes that I'm trying to hit, and that is this sort of new metamorphosis that librarians are going through, and many of them quite successfully and perhaps some less successfully. And certainly if you just go onto YouTube, if you can't copy all of this down and search under Jim Neal, you'll be able to find that. But the real areas of concern for me have to do with our image. You know, one of the things I put in my paper was that it all really crystallized for me when I was attending a meeting of the Association of Governing Boards, which is an organization that is attended primarily by presidents and chairs of boards. And in fact, a lot of state universities and community college systems attend this meeting. It's a very high-level meeting, of course, and they're mostly looking at the macro issues of what's going on in higher education, broadly defined. I was at a meeting in Phoenix 5 years ago when there was a fascinating session where they had five presidents who had all retired in the last year, one from a state university all the way down to a community college in terms of the range of size and scale. And they basically couldn't agree on anything. The only thing that they actually could agree on was that no one should ever build another library. And I have to tell you, I was a little bit stunned when I heard that, and particularly as I looked around at my fellow attendees to watch them all nod in complete acceptance that libraries, in a sense, were perhaps dinosaurs in the minds of many administrators. So I think that as I began to cope and deal with that, I came to a number of questions which I put in the article. And perhaps most important of those questions is to begin to really ask ourselves, what is our plan for the library, particularly if we look not just a year or two in advance, which I understand can be very challenging, but a long-term in advance. And I have to say, as a person who sits in many, many budget hearings for the various institutions that I work with, We're all finding ourselves under a lot of fiscal constraints. We're all beginning to realize that we're in a long, slow climb out of a pretty tough economic time. We're seeing a lot of changes in behavior. Faculty are changing. What I call the Mr. Chips type faculty members are not really being replaced by similar types of faculty members. These are faculty members who are usually two-income families with kids and very busy lives. And efficiency and expediency are pretty much the name of the game with many of those faculty. We're seeing student behavior really change a lot in terms of if I take student behavior outside of the library, clearly students have a very different relationship with technology than most of us, of certainly my era, who is sort of the 50 or over group. And what we're beginning to see is that certainly students and faculty have different perception of technology in general based upon generational lines. And one of my concerns as I work with faculty here in Claremont and other places is that faculty sometimes perceive libraries somewhat imprinted by a generational view, where they, in fact, begin to see that break down a bit as they work with their various students who use libraries in some ways dramatically differently than many of us experienced it. Perhaps one of the best ways to illustrate that is there's a lot of debate going on in higher education undergraduate schools about even the concept of plagiarism. And many students are beginning to push back that things like going to primary sources instead of secondary sources or tertiary sources, and even things like plagiarism, are really not appropriate any longer, even though I think we could all debate those points. But it is a significant generational shift, and it's beginning to show up in a lot of library activities and some of the disconnects that exist between faculty, students, and libraries. As we look at the conclusions of the article, mostly I'm trying to advocate that we really need to take a strong activist view, that we need to have very concrete plans for the library. And mostly, I think that the most important thing a library can do is I sit on the other side of the table and watch my colleagues react to different kinds of proposals, sometimes libraries, sometimes other things. Is they're really looking for entrepreneurs, innovators, people who are going to be change agents. And I would say that I could give you an example of five or six different librarians I've worked with in the last 5 years who have been really model change agents, people who are very much leading the way of modern librarianship. I think it would be less than honest if I didn't also say that for everyone that's a true leader, I can probably name two librarians who are what I call slackers, people who are resistant to change, people who are basically hiding behind the counter, and who don't really embrace this new idea and a lot of the change that's going on in libraries. And unfortunately, that kind of attitude can sometimes be used to characterize the library as an overall institution to its discredit. Secondly, I think it's very important to recognize that while traditionally, when I was in library school back in the dark ages, a lot of an academic library's quality was measured in the form of the richness of its collection. And even though we are in very challenging economic times, the reality is that today you can buy, if you have enough money, you can buy great collections. So having the collection itself be the quality measure of a library is really outdated. And it's really not about owning information now. It's about getting information. And I think most of you already probably have excellent programs to do that. But it continues to astound me how many of the librarians that I meet who are perhaps in that slacker bucket, as much as that it may offend a few people, I don't mean to, but it's true, do not yet understand that it's all about services and delivering information, not just acquiring and storing information. The third thing I would point to is we really need to challenge our traditional library tools. As you heard earlier, I spent a lot of my early career in the technical services, documents management, and then into the technology side. And one of the hard things that we have to deal with is the fact that many of the traditions that we built over many decades, maybe even longer than that, are really no longer relevant to some of the things that we need to do in terms of services and the students that we serve. So I think it's very important that we consider that going forward. And finally, and you've been incredibly patient, obviously comes down to the future of librarianship. Do I think that libraries are going away? Absolutely not. Do I think that librarianship is under threat? Yes, actually I do. I actually do think that, because I'm beginning to see and participate in a lot of discussions with people who are very smart, well-intentioned people, that in some cases they don't see the value add that we used to see automatically. And a lot of that has to do with the way the librarians relate to the local faculty and students on an academic campus. So I think that a lot of the traditional methods that we might have used, and that many of you have probably long abandoned, that's why you're listening to a call like this, is you're probably not the people that are suffering from these issues. But there are those out there who are probably under threat of becoming obsolete because they're really not adapting in time. And I think that as we look at the modern librarianship, it's going to be an integration of good old-fashioned information retrieval skills, but also partnering with faculty on curriculum, adapting to student needs, doing things like incorporating and managing course management and content systems in addition to the traditional library tools, and really trying to remold ourselves to be more nimble and adaptive and entrepreneurial. So those are my opinions. I'm sure that we'll hear some excellent rebuttals and or friendly amendments depending on the case, but I really think that we have a great future ahead if we can just be nimble and adaptive and entrepreneurial moving forward.
Thank you, Bob. A quick couple of reminders for folks. If you are having any questions about the webinar, please chat. Send us a chat mail, or you can see some of those numbers on the screen. If you are a new member, please mute your line by pressing *6. And now we will turn to Jillian McCombs. Jill, please take it away.
Thank you very much. Bob, I couldn't agree with everything that you've said more. It was wonderful to hear someone else to be on the same page. But first, I'd just like to say hello to many good colleagues that I see here who are listening in, good colleagues throughout the state. It's wonderful to have you as part of this discussion. You see a photograph of me here with books. Well, let me tell you, I'm not just all about books. This is a funny photo my staff captured when I was about to take a long trip. And just the idea of 11 hours in the car with a huge box of books is just still very exciting to me. What can I say? But I love Google. I love the Internet, and I just love the way that our collections have been unlocked and made available to everyone. Of course, it's not always everything to everybody, but compared to the access to collections globally, even as recent as 10 years ago, it's just frankly amazing. Of course, it does bring with it the expectation that just about everything should be on the web, from previously proprietary financial information, medical diagnostic information and drug information to all one's family photographs. If it's not on the web, it might be considered not to exist, particularly by our younger users. Not to say that I think we're in a perfect state of affairs. There are many thorny issues that we still need to work out, such as copyright, privacy, revising our cultural norms, and so on. But I do think that the Google search box has become a seminal development, easily the equivalent of the Gutenberg press. Maybe more. We don't actually talk about Gutenberging when we talk about printing, but we do talk about Googling when we want to search for information. Of course, there are challenges, but also just some incredible opportunities, which is why I do think it's just a wonderful time to be a librarian. So, talking about the big challenges, I just think that, Bob, you're absolutely right on here. And you picked up on the very first thing that I put on my slide here, which is image. This is really absolutely crucial. Do we reflect the librarian stereotype, that mousy image of a lady of a certain age going shh? Or are we something else? Are we exciting? Are we fun? Do we have a sense of humor? Do we say yes more than we say no? And how do we interact or communicate? Are we seen as having energy? Do we have synergy? Do we make things happen? Are we seen as leaders in the institution, change agents, partners, entrepreneurs? Picking up on one of your key terms. Again, cultural intelligence, or CQ. This is an important new concept within management and organizational psychology that believes an understanding of cultural backgrounds and behavior is crucial for anyone to be successful in the global environment we all work in today. People with higher CQs are regarded as better able to succeed in any environment and to be more effective. And this is something we really need to pay attention to. And then future-oriented. Clearly, higher education and our profession are undergoing extreme change. Are we seen as thinking for the future? Are we able to leave behind the old ways of doing things? Can we be flexible? Can we accommodate new rules? Let us get to the first topic. How are or can librarians be deemed fundamental to achieving the broad institutional goals? You have to ask the question, is your library considered central or peripheral? Are you considered a change agent? And, of course, I'm thinking both at the dean's level and the librarian level. If you look at the current issue of ACRL, College and Research Library News, ACRL President Laurie Getch's message, the current issue is that librarians and libraries do not exist for themselves. We have to understand why are we here. And then, of course, I'd like to just tell you a few things about what we're doing at FN to make sure that we're central to the campus mission. We are right now the only 24/7 building on campus. We figured out how to lock down our major Fondren library, and we are 24/7 for the most of the semester, and that has created a huge jump in our both circulation of materials, but also in numbers of people and students who come into the library. And I think that occasionally our administration forgets that we are it right now for that 24/7 experience. But we've also developed some really specific and unique connections with student life. I've created a student advisory council that meets monthly. Students get together and talk about what's good and what's not so good about the library. We have promenade events on our Laura Bush Promenade. We have the annual cookout. We have a welcome event. And for the first time this year, we served free coffee and energy drinks from 1 p.m. to midnight during finals. And this really kind of creates a buzz in the library that students just want to come to the library and want to be involved. We've also been seen as innovative technology leaders with the creation of the Information Commons, a student multimedia center where you can do everything from Final Cut Pro to practice your own presentation for a class, and then a leader in campus digitization efforts. We have Content DM up, and right now we're doing a pilot with DSpace. At the same time, you've got to be a little careful. You can't be too far ahead of your community. We did get started on this about 4 or 5 years ago. Campus was not ready. Our user base was not ready. So you do have to take the temperature of your community when you're trying to enable change. You mentioned faculty support, Bob, and I think that there are some negatives, since we do know that faculty often want to keep things the same way, but you have to work with your faculty to get support and get them to believe in you, because without strong faculty support, I don't think you're going to get very far when the administration wants to look at where the resource dollars go. Our Faculty Senate Subcommittee on Libraries and Technology, we make sure the chair is invited in all our important library initiatives, such as our ongoing search for a new director of scholarly resources. And we involve other members on space planning and strategic planning. I think another important thing is to have a close relationship with your central technology services, because they can be very helpful in assisting you with partnerships. We owe our information systems, in fact, to a space swap with our academic computing services. And so they have just been wonderful partners. I think it's important to make sure that your special collections departments are involved with faculty for both programming and research. support to show that those collections are just not locked away, and you have to kind of get behind the gate to see what's there. Bringing classes in to look at those incredible resources is a wonderful way to show off our collections. And again, connections within the administrative community. We partnered with our human resources department to bring out the 360 evaluation process. And use an information. Make sure you've got good people who love the libraries and are willing to feed your stories in the press. Of course, the strategic plan. This is really crucial that you are able to develop a strategic plan that shows where you hope to be going. It's an opportunity to demonstrate that you're really in sync with the issues on education, higher education, and the university. I'm showing you right now the cover designed by one of our staff members here for our Unbooked and Unbound, which is actually a riff on SMU's New Capital campaign theme, SMU Unbridled, the Second Century campaign. But again, it shows that we are in sync with SMU's mission. And clearly, if your provost wants to look and see where are you going on the future, this is just one example. Credibility. This is topic B. How do libraries gain credibility within the institution? Again, this gets back to your image. Gauge your culture. I do believe it's also very, very important that you have a dean at the top, because you get this positional power. And then you can, of course, have partnerships with the other deans. But when you look at your culture, you really have to look and see. It goes kind of from the mundane, how do you actually dress, to the sublime, should you attend the football games or the annual chess match. So these things you actually have to take care and look at. But first and foremost, you do need to be credible within your library. Staff need to believe in you and your message, because they are the people who are going to make it happen. I mean, as a dean, you have very little of the day-to-day business, but how successful have you been in communicating your vision to the staff and empowering them to make it happen? Some of the strategies that we've used at SMU, I think, don't shy away from the big assignments. I think sometimes as librarians, we try to be just a little risk averse, but you have to go for those big assignments because that will establish your credibility. And of course, volunteer. Don't wait to be asked. You might never be asked until you have already created your visibility. Create networks of advocacy. Have other people do your advocating for you. We've got some really good groups of students, parents, boards of advisors who can go to the provost or the president to talk about what we're doing really well or where they think we need to get some additional support. And, of course, you've got to be available to talk on any number of topics for the university. You can't be scared of the spotlight. If this is not something you're comfortable with, take some lessons in public speaking, because it is expected that you can get out there and represent the university. I think it's also really, really important that you seed your able, inspiring young librarians into university-wide committees, because they need to take that message forth that we're not all fuddy-duddies. We've got young people in the library. They know what they're talking about, and they have a sense of excitement. This has really worked for us with our general education, our new curriculum committee. We've got librarians on the provostial and decanal search committees, and this has just really helped boost the library's image. I also think it's really, really important when you're trying to build data support models that you use outside consultants, because they tend to get trusted more. Of course, we librarians, we're going to always represent the position we think is better for us, but if you have an outside consultant that can provide this data, it goes a long way. You've got to support the institution. That's absolutely crucial. Attend that football game. Go to the president's holiday party. Show up for all the receptions. Pledge for the annual fund. There are many, many ways to show that you support the institution. And above all, do not whine. frankly, we all have challenges. The provost always has challenges, but it's our job, and I'm speaking as a dean, to do something about those challenges. And I think a glass half full attitude is going to get us a long way. Was it Woody Allen who said 80% of success is showing up? That's really, really important. And let me just move on quickly to something that we have found is very crucial, and that is to have a short mantra that talks about what your customer service or whatever it is, what your theme is going to be. So we're focusing for the next 5 years on customer service. Two words, not hard to forget. If you're interested in looking at that yourself, making it your own, I can recommend the Starbucks experience. We all know how great it is to go to Starbucks. Look at these principles. There's nothing in there that librarians can't take home. I'm going to give you a couple of examples from CUL. You can all see those on the website. And my own personal 5 E's on Bob, hopefully. We're going to be more energetic, enabling, and envisioning we're not going to be in those bucket of slackers. So I'd just like to leave you with one lovely photo of CUL and appreciate the opportunity to talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Jillian. Just a reminder to all everyone, we are going to have this session recorded, and we also have our presenters online past the 45-minute mark, so we will still be able to take questions and have a discussion, so no worries. And next I want to introduce Tracy Mendoza. Tracy, if you will take it away.
Oh, okay, thank you. Hi. First, let me say I don't know where Bob's slackers are, but because I work with a great group of Texas librarians, and I think a lot of the things in the article that he referred to didn't cause me a lot of heartburn. Let me just say that I'm going to answer and relate to the article from the perspective of a community college and just give you a little background about my particular situation. I'm the dean of Northeast Lakeview College, which is a brand new college. In fact, we just opened our full campus this fall. We're part of the Alamo Colleges in San Antonio. So new college, new library. And this is from a unique perspective of not only building a physical space, but the entire program. This library will never have a microfiche reader, and it will have a very small physical periodical collection that will be a browsing collection. And we currently have three times as many e-books as we do physical books, and like everyone else, we have significantly more access to e-journals and articles through aggregators and collections than any community college library of my youth would ever dream of having. So let me go ahead and get started and tell you that I am going to come at this from that perspective, and to do this adequately, let me give you a little bit of background about community colleges, their mission, and their libraries. There are more than 600,000 students enrolled in Texas community colleges, and in 2007, there were more students enrolled in community colleges than in the four-year institutions, and that number has increased and will continue to increase. We have the majority of the freshman-sophomore level students, so the undergraduates, lower level, and we also have a majority of minority freshmen. We also have a greater percentage of first-generation in college and also greater percentage of students taking at least one developmental course. Knowing that that is some of our makeup of who we're serving, know that we've always had a mission of open enrollment in community colleges and access to higher education. In fact, these institutions have been around for 75 years in their current form. They were created with the idea that more access to education would fix the nation's ills and would accommodate the growing number of high school graduates. As we read the article, we were supposed to answer two questions. One was, how do we become credible and remain credible in the eyes of administrators? And with that definition of administrator, I'm going to say our institutional administrators, the ones who allocate and create budgets, how do we get a piece of that pie? And also, what's the future role of librarians in academia? How do we keep our finger on what at one time was called the heart of the institution and central to the scholarly and educational mission? I want to say, I don't think the article really caused me much heartburn. It may have been disheartening in some places, but the comment about the reality of other loud institutional voices, we've all experienced that, so that wasn't too new, And to that, I say, get more creative and get more vocal. And I'll talk more about that later. There is one simple thing that administrators can do to support the library mission as it supports the institutional mission, and it won't cost a dime. And that's to put the link to the library's page or portal in an obvious place. Don't make your students and your faculty go looking for us. That will help a lot. The other comment about the administrators only agreeing on one thing, that no library should be built without a coffee bar, this, of course, is an oversimplification of the issues surrounding the transformation of libraries, and they've succinctly set it down to a coffee bean. But this is really just, this comment is probably just representing the fact that our users are really advocating more convenience. This leads to one of my favorite quotes, and I won't read it to you, but it's about the Maytag repairman and us going the way of the Maytag repairman. But the stories of our demise have been greatly exaggerated. We aren't dead yet. We still have time to decide how we will continue our journey and what role we will play. We are clearly in a transformation stage where we are having to meet the changing needs and yet still feel that we have a continued need to act as a preserver of our cultural heritage. In a study that was done in 2006, and I've got a quote from it on the side of the screen, in the future, faculty expect to be less dependent on the library and increasingly dependent on electronic materials. And we already know that this is happening. The obvious question is, where do these faculty think these electronic materials are coming from and made available by? I think there's a real disconnect with, because we're making things so much more available online, that we're not doing a good job in advocating that those online materials that we license, that we make available, and that we give instruction for using are actually part of our library. So how do we become credible in the eyes of administrators? Both Jillian and Bob talked about it. You put your team out there. Jillian was very specific about how you put your team out there. She said, get them on committees, have them serve on task forces, have them step up and serve on accreditation. That's very important, that whatever's happening around your institution, you need your team to be on top of whatever's going on and bring their perspective to whatever is being decided, especially the strategic plan. And when you're doing any kind of assessment, don't just ask your users, ask your non-users as well. As you go through this, you need to provide your administrators with information about your programs and how they support institutional goals. In other words, we already know that there's a cacophony of other loud institutional voices out there, so provide your administration with information and data about your programs, trends that you're experiencing, assessment outcomes. It doesn't hurt to also let them know how you're operating financially as related to cost avoidance and cost sharing. And we all know that we need to adapt and innovate our programs and services based on our assessment, and that assessment is not just the library's assessment of its own programs, but the assessment that the institution does as well. Partner, partner, partner. Partner with departments and support areas. The article suggests that we align with partner with faculty in support of the curriculum, and this is a no-brainer for community colleges because this is a significant part of the mission. We are a teaching institution. It wouldn't hurt to tie your programs to funding. Even community colleges can go out there and look for collaborative grants and community gifting. Libraries look good in grant applications, and so you have a good selling point in that. And do not throw out the baby with the bathwater. If it still makes sense, then advocate for it. In other words, innovate strategically. Know that your institution, know what you need. Just because it's a popular trend, it may not be a trend that forwards your institutional agenda or one that you can adapt to your circumstances. What do the studies show? There are several studies out there that have assessed the future of libraries and what users want from their libraries. I've listed three of them here. You can also do peer assessment and studies based on for libraries like LibQual and NESI and CESI, which are assessments for student engagement. NESI is for four-year institutions, and CESI is for the community colleges. And they don't necessarily ask about libraries, but they do ask about what students need and what faculty are looking for. In 2006, Ithaca Studies of Key Stakeholders in the Digital Transformation in Higher Education asked both faculty and librarians about what they saw was the importance of libraries. research institutions typically give some kind of nod to the preservation function of libraries. The importance of this function was actually split along discipline lines. Sciences and engineering faculty typically saw that they were more interested in electronic access and preservation of electronic resources, while the humanities departments and faculty were still very interested in what would be termed traditional preservation and access to those resources. OCLC study, Perceptions of Libraries and Information Resources, we've all had a chance to look at this, and there was a cohort of college students that were asked, but generally, overall, the perception of the respondents identified books with libraries and not necessarily any other kind of information source. This is a real disconnect about the virtual library not being the library. This is where you can do your own kind of assessment and see how your programs and services are being perceived, and that would be very important. At two institutions where I have worked as a director, a very small percentage of students actually indicated they didn't even know the college had a library. One group of students had actually graduated, so they did have some time before they came to that conclusion. When we did a little further digging, we came to the conclusion that these students didn't really know that the library on the college campus was the college library. They thought it was a public library. And in some cases, the students who were using the online library did not equate the online resources with the library. And so this is where promotion and marketing of our services comes into play. In the OCLC study, one thing that was revealed is that students and library users want more opportunities and more tools for their own discovery and own self-reliance. So that is a direction that we can take. The EDUCAUSE, ECAUSE, is a longitudinal study of undergraduate students and also their technology use. It is really kind of geared for technology, but there is a section in there on information literacy. And not surprisingly, the students rated themselves as either expert or very skilled when it came to searching the internet with efficiency and effectiveness. It did not ask specifically about searching databases. They did not rate themselves as highly when it came to evaluating the resources, the reliability, and the ethical issues surrounding information. So there are some studies out there that you can look at and see how they can relate to your particular situation. What is the future role of academic librarians and libraries? Well, obviously, one of the things that we're going to want to do are grow our partnerships and grow our partnerships with instructional faculty and direct support of curricular goals. So for this to work, though, we're going to have obvious support from our administration for this partnering to be effective. Continued development of assessment that is tied directly to course learning outcomes is one way to continue that instructional partnership. And one way that you can do that is by looking at the course objectives and the course learning outcomes for some of your core curriculum. A lot of their learning outcomes are specific to information literacy skills like critical thinking, and that's a natural tie-in. Bob did mention in his article things like not tying to standard input data like FTE per collection size. I'm not so sure that libraries are really using this much anymore unless it's for peer comparison or we're just being asked for this information for accrediting body. At least with my types of libraries, I'm not sure that we're using those kinds of things. I think that librarians will continue to take a more active role in programs aimed at institutional goals for improving retention, persistence, and student success. You'll find yourself partnering with departments like distance learning, academic support and tutoring, and skill development. I'm sure that you, like us, are finding yourselves as also being technical assistants as that's being driven by the curriculum. We answer 400% more questions about technology than we do anything else. The future role will continue to morph. We will have collaborative learning centers and mixed-use space, and we will adapt as the changing landscape of higher education changes. And that leads me into one of my favorite quotes. This article, a quote that I'm about to show you, was given to me by one of my former college presidents, and she highlighted this passage. And I'm going to let you have a little bit of time to read that. But I felt really good knowing that my college president thought highly of our profession enough to take the time to find this and highlight it and give it to me and to admit that we really are trying to adapt what we're doing to the needs of our institution and to higher education. Lastly, libraries have a universal appeal, and will continue to support the long-held tradition of creative slumber and power naps. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. We're now going to open up this portion of the webinar to questions, and I'm going to give you all a chance to raise your hand, and we'll call on you. First, I want to pose to Bob a question that came in on the chat line, which is wanting to find out a little bit more about your ideal of an academic institution that is working well and doing some modeling work. Bob?
Say that again. Please.
Okay. We had a question about somebody in the field interested to know what your ideal is, what you consider a model academic library doing some really entrepreneurial kinds of activities.
One example would be, I would use a couple of very specific things. One is something we call the Embedded Librarian Program. Like one of the questioners on the chat asked, we had a serious problem with people simply disengaging from the library. As we've heard from both Jillian and Tracy, clearly many of our users now don't use the physical facility. They become almost exclusive, in some cases, online users. And so that puts us in sort of a passive position. We don't always know whether or not we're being helpful or not. So one of the programs I've seen that was very successful and continues to evolve is the Embedded Librarian Program, where the library simply takes the librarians out of the building. They don't even work in the building. And they co-reside with faculty. They crash meetings. They attend faculty department meetings. They really become embedded with several disciplines of faculty. And even though it sounds like you're pushing your way in, which you are, a lot of positive things have happened from that. A second example would be that in one of the institutions that I visited, they actually took over the entire course management system and became essentially the landing place for all new faculty. So when faculty came to the institution as new faculty, or perhaps in cases where you had faculty coming in on a visitation program, the library staff became their colleagues and mentors, in a sense, in terms of how to plug into the culture of the academic software systems, which then made it really easy to begin to collaborate on content creation. And the last example is where, you know, once again, you have faculty who simply retreat in some cases, and certainly students do. One library I visited actually put in sales management software, as horrible as this may sound for some staff, where they began to give each librarian a certain quota of people that they had to go out and chase down. So this idea of library as well, where people come and dip occasionally, was no longer, this became the sprinkler system. So you had to go out and sprinkle people whether they wanted your help or not. And again, it sounds like a fairly aggressive and assertive, almost obnoxious approach, but actually it yielded a lot of positive results and actually changed the nature of the library's perception by those faculty members.
Great. Thank you, Bob. We've had a question for our panelists, so I'll ask Jillian and Tracy to each take their turn addressing this, because it's an interesting question. Jillian, if you'll start, the question is, how do we relate to faculty and students who aren't coming to the library?
Well, I'm interested you picked me. I just had written down a note to ask Tracy, since she mentioned this, that one needs to get to, when you're doing focus groups and surveys, get to the people who don't use the library. I'm very curious, Tracy, how do you actually do that? Because that's been something that we have been trying to figure out for quite some time. So can I offer the mic, as it were, to Tracy?
Well, let me just say that keep in mind we are a brand new library, but I will tell you what we've done so far. We're the only community college in our area that decided that the LibQual survey was a good thing to do. Now, the way that the LibQual has been done at other institutions is they may make it available, and then they just try to promote it with either drawings for prizes, and they just try to get the best response rate they could. Well, I had the support of my administration to treat the LibQual survey as if it were a pencil and paper survey. And so I had to go and get random classes selected by each discipline and allocate time in a lab for them to bring their classes to take the LibQol survey. We had a significant response rate to that, and so we know that a lot of those students are not necessarily library users. So that was one way that we tried to reach out to our non-library users was the administrative support for getting the feedback from students across the curriculum and across the spectrum, those that use the library and those that don't. So that was one way that we did it. The other way that we do it, and I'm sure that a lot of other libraries do the same thing, is that wherever there's a student event, we're there. It could be just a fun event, a spring fling, or any kind of career fair, whatever it is. We just make ourselves available to provide information, to sign them up for whatever it is that we're promoting. It could be ebooks or, you know, for whatever. So we just try to put ourselves in as many places as we can where students are. And we do, like Jillian suggested, have students who are represented on an advisory committee that give us some feedback in that way also.
Great, thank you. And we have a couple of other questions that are come in. And the first is asking the panel to address the issue of balancing dollars and balancing dollars between technology and human resources for future customer service. Bob, do you want to start with that one?
Sure. It's a tough question, particularly in these times. And one of the things that I would say that I would recommend that all libraries do is when we went through a fairly serious examination of our library budgets last year, we prepared a pretty comprehensive menu of pros and cons of cutting and expanding various services, meaning we didn't even approach it as a net sum game in that we actually really tried to divorce ourselves from our own professional strategies and try and really allow our users and some of the administrators in the colleges that we serve weigh in on things. And they chose some things, frankly, that we might not have chosen. But what it did do is it sometimes allowed the creation of dollars, whether it's on the human side, human capital side, or on the technology side. We actually basically launched on a premise that status quo shouldn't be the beginning point, that we should actually step back and examine potentially cutting into existing services to fund new services as one of the mechanisms for launching those. And what we found is that many of our users we're actually happy to do that. Here in Claremont, as one example, we actually closed two branch locations where even though we had some faculty in those locations that were very unhappy with that decision, we also saw that that funded a number of initiatives that were very significant in both the human resources and technology area.
Great. Thank you, Bob. And I see that we actually have a raised hand. Jeannie, we're going to get ready to call on you. If you will unmute your line and push *7, we will give you a chance to ask your question. Jeannie, are you on the line? Okay, well, Jeannie unmutes her line. We have another question that has come in through the chat line, which is, what about staff who persist in saying that they just want to avoid changes? Jillian, how would you deal with that?
Well, I suspect that right now my staff know me well enough to think they're probably not going to say that to me. because, I mean, clearly not every change is a good change. You don't want to change just the change thing, but that is what life is all about. And clearly this is kind of the culture that I'm trying to promote. And so I think you just have to make sure that your top line managers are able to take this message down. Because in actual fact, I find sometimes I have young librarians that are really anxious to make some change, but either the process structure, that is how these changes get up to fruition, or the management culture is not quite ready to adapt and take these changes forward. So I think, again, it comes to leadership, but also one-on-one discussions with the staff. Maybe they're not in the best place for where their particular strengths could come. And then also allowing people to try things and to fail and to let them know it's okay. We created this award called our Eureka Award because it put some money on an award where someone could try something new. They don't have to have succeeded, but it just puts some incentive there. So, again, you just kind of have to walk the walk and talk the talk on that one.
Right. Thanks, Jill. Tracy, did you have anything you wanted? As a note, we got a chat from someone who said, tell them you've got their retirement papers ready. Tracy, anything you want to add on that?
Well, you know, the fact is there's a lot of competition for funding in higher education right now, and especially in the state of Texas where they're talking about success rates being tied directly to budget. The idea is that someone doesn't want to do assessment or doesn't want to even look or address change. I think the best thing to do is have support from the administration, and that might be you, or it might be someone higher than you. But the thing is, after you talk with this person and you give them some guidance on what they need to do, at some point they may not be employed.
That's right. Well, I think Jeannie is on the line now. Jeannie, are you ready to ask your question?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can.
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, we've done these things where we've looked at the things we are doing and seeing what we can stop doing and what we need to be doing. And I thought it's kind of interesting. I don't know if anybody else has picked up on. To me, what we just recently are starting to deal with is a disconnect. I feel kind of schizophrenic. We have been focusing so much on the end user and teaching people to be self-sufficient, and the survey shows students want these tools for self-discovery, but yet then you have Bob who just said, you know, the faculty want efficiency and expediency, and so now we're coming back and we're having faculty saying, I don't want to do my own search. It's almost like we're going back 30 years, and I'm dating myself, but saying, let's, you know, you provide me all the resources that I need, and you just do it and hand it to me. So how do you balance between trying to teach that self-sufficiency, you know, that whole teach a man to fish versus doing it all for them? I mean, I could see if we go back and do that, then we certainly are now showing we have some value. I guess the cynical approach would be we're struggling so hard to find out how we have relevance in the future.
Jeannie, this is Tracy. One thing that I thought was interesting in those two studies that I looked at were that faculty of different disciplines want different things right now. And I do think that we're kind of in a transformative stage. So we're still trying to serve a more traditional role with some faculty and some disciplines, and yet there are some others that really do want that self-reliance. And so I guess part of what we have to do is maybe if you have subject librarians or maybe what Bob called embedded librarians that can go and assess what a particular department or slash division wants and kind of just tailor what you're doing to what they need right now.
That's pretty much what we are doing.
Yeah.
I also think this is an opportunity for you to look at customer service. So, for instance, we had a dean actually in the library looking for a book. It was not on the shelf. So he went to the circulation desk, and they did the search, and of course, by this time he was back in his office, they made the search, they found the book. So the customer service doesn't just send him an email and says, it's here, come and get it. The customer service aspect has you actually going to the dean's office with that book and giving it to him. And I imagine how he knows we're all short staffed, so he feels just so much better about that personal touch. But it is always a fine line between being the handmaiden for everything and doing those little extra things that will make you seem really valuable in a variety of different ways.
This is Bob. I think this is a very challenging area because faculty, you know, we all love faculty, but they come in a wide number of choices in terms of personality and demands and sensibility, frankly. To Jillian's point, one of the things we constantly try and do is evaluate the services we're providing with those that you can get on the outside that are not library related. So, for example, I can order a book from Amazon and have it delivered tomorrow. So actually, we do deliver. Any faculty member that wants to have a book at our libraries, they can click on a button, and we deliver it, as many as they want. And so these are and our library staff at first saw this as pandering, but actually it's just good customer service. And maybe you can argue that it's a waste of money. It just depends on the blend of whether that reconnects those faculty with the library and they become more advocates for the library. So it's a delicate balance all the time.
Well, I think we are out of time now, but I want to thank our wonderful panel, and we had some really great questions. If you all have other questions, please feel free to email them to me, and I can shepherd them to our panelists. Again, we have a survey that will be available, some information on taking a survey on the webinar after we close. Thank you all again very much, and we are going to go ahead and close our webinar now. Thank you, everyone, for participating, and we look forward to seeing you at the next TLA CE event for academic librarians. Thank you.